No, thank you, and it's always fun to be able to have more company people here than we have regulators, but now we actually brought a few new faces, and we're thankful for the commission just giving us kind of, a quick opportunity. In that there's a few things that last few months we've become aware of that are changing, and that's the world we live in relation to our IRP. We simply wanted to give you a heads up of some of these changes and things that are happening out in the industry that are a little interesting too, that you might be aware of, you might not, that could impact our lives with changes. We may be doing a few things at the first of the year related to some of the things that we're going to be talking to you about today, hence the reason why we wanted to at least have you be aware of that. And I've said that in the tense of we may be doing that. We're continuing to review and look at some of these things. But I'm Barry McKay. I think most know that, but I know Casey has it. Is this your first time being
here? Yes, it is.
That to make you feel totally part of the family and the group here, we're going to make everybody introduce themselves.
And then there'll be a quiz at the end.
But you got to know what your expertise is, so when it comes along. But Jordan, why don't you just...
Yep, I'm Jordan Stevenson, Westar Gas.
And he put together with these slides, so... Full credit, along with a few others here that helped put them together well. And Matt, go ahead, Dean.
Tina Gauss, Western Gas Supply.
William Frederick Schwarzenbach III. Western
Gas. You have got to report to your boss that he introduced himself.
Now, he's going to be mad he missed it.
Yeah. I've had several requests.
I'm Matt Barton, the Director of Engineering for Questra Gas.
I'm Casey Heinrich. I'm an integrity corrosion engineer. I've been here for 2 years since I'm new. I'm introduced myself. And prior to that, I had 6 years in integrity pipeline risk engineer.
So that's a little foreshadowing of some of the things you might see us talking about.
Just me.
Maybe. These guys don't know who you are, John.
That's true. John Harvey, I'm a Commission Technical Staff.
I'm Eric Gordon, I'm with the Division.
Thad Lavar with Public Service Commission.
Dan Martinez with the Office of Consumer Services.
Bela Bastog with the Office also.
Kelly Mendenhall with Questar Gas.
Jennifer Clark, I'm also with Questar Gas.
Mark Warner, DOT Compliance, Questar Corp.
I'm Austin Carter Summers, the only.
You're probably going to need to do that one again. Yeah. It didn't have the impact.
It's not as good as. No.
Doug Wheelwright with the Division.
Carolyn Roll with the Division.
Carol Ann Elizabeth Rebecca.
With the commission.
I like that. Okay, we are, it's a good time of year, and I do hope everyone has a good Christmas season, holiday season too. We have a few folks that may need to be leaving here. We got a little bit of a diverse group. You got at least three distinct topics, as the notice indicated, and so you may see people need to slip out accordingly. But to start off, we thought we'd... okay, this thing just went dead on us. Give me a second. I'll get it. We'll wake it up again. Okay. We want to talk to you a little bit about our peak day, particularly as it relates to some of our plan for this year in our IRP. And Will, get up here, Will. You're going to be talking us through this. We always have what our plan essentially is. And as you know, as you get closer, depending on what sources and resources you have, it has little tweaks here and there. He's going to fill us in on that, and then how peak hour might become an issue here in the future.
Hey, he's just throwing all my...
Hi, Dan. You got the slides.
Well, first, let's talk a little bit about peak day. I think some of you may recognize this. It's been referred to in the past, or at least internally, as our birthday cake graph. But this is our supply that makes up our peak day. So this you'll recognize is about 1.3 million hectares. Let's do that. So that's our peak day right there. This is our plan that was in the IRP. And as you know, that's kind of our plan in June with the best available information from June. for what we'll do for a peak day this winter. A few updates, a few tweaks to that, and you wind up with kind of what we're calling our plan. That's where we are right now with what we're going to do for our peak day. We'll go into a little more detail on the comparison between the two. One thing I'd like to highlight is Rickman Storage. The latest was, their latest announcement was that they were actually going to be up and in service today. They sent us a notice, I think, yesterday or the day before that said that they were not, but it is any day now.
Very soon.
You know, it's getting closer, but it's still not there, not up and running. We are going to do some testing kind of on our own of what it can do once it is in service, but it's not yet. So what that means for a peak day is that if we do have a peak day before that is up in service, if it's after it's up in service and we put some gas in, we'll be fine and we'll use that Rickman storage to meet that peak day. If not, our transportation capacity that's going to be used to move that Rickman storage volume, that's actually going to a good spot. It's going to Overthrust Pipeline. We would just have to purchase that much additional on the spot market. And that's how we'd make up for that. So just wanted to give you that quick update there as to the Rickman storage. Eric?
So you mean it'll be packed on
Overthrust?
Thanks. You pack Overthrust and then drop from there?
No, we'll just buy gas from Overthrust. Either buy gas somewhere upstream on the Overthrust pipeline and move it on Overthrust. We're more likely just buy it delivered to us off of Overthrust. So somebody who has capacity on Overthrust, who has supply on Overthrust, we would buy it from there.
Pipeline owns Overthrust, right?
Pipeline owns Overthrust. But there's a lot of shippers that have gas. Overthrust in our mind is probably one of the better supply points going forward because it goes east all the way to Rockies Express, has quite a bit of gas moving on it, quite a bit of access to different supply areas now. So it's a good source to get to. But it also happens to be right where Rickman Creek Storage is located, is right where Questar Pipeline ties into Overthrust Pipeline. So it's a good location. Hopefully Rickman Storage will be up and running and will be utilizing that contract, but right now it's not. So you notice there are some differences between these two. Let's talk about it real quick. Our spot gas, based on the IRP, we had about 600, and in our plan we've got 576, very close. Like I said, minor tweaks there. Some of that are peaking. We also have a little bit less of peaking. Some of that's been made up with additional baseload. We just got some good pricing on baseload offers, some good locations, allowed us to kind of shore it up for the season. So adjusted those with some minor tweaks in there. You can see Rickman's in there. Aquifers is one tweak. The case that was provided in the IRP had a little less usage of the aquifers. We have a little more capacity than that, so we plan to bring a little bit more from the aquifers. Clay Basin stays the same. And our cost of service is pretty close. It's a little bit higher right now than what was forecasted back then. So we upped that a little bit. But this just gives you an idea. And you can see they're all very close, just minor tweaks from the plan.
Sorry, you're on the program still. You can't die. You can lose some of these other guys.
Must be allergic to Will.
Does that mean the branch of pancake that goes from the Overthrust right plus the pipeline right?
They could be built in, yeah. You could be rate stacking, is what it's often called. If we were to go back to somewhere and buy the gas at Rockies Express and we didn't have capacity already for it, we could pay it, I think the Overthrust rate's 5 cents. 5 cents on Overthrust to move that. That's their max rate right now, I think. And or if we buy it delivered, we pay whatever, we'd pay whatever the delivered price was coming out of Overthrust, so. It would all depend, but again, that's kind of a contingency plan. It's not necessarily what we're doing, and it would depend on pricing. It would do that, but that's a contingency plan for if we can't get gas out of Britain. If we don't have any gas in there, if we can't get gas out of there.
Did we speak about the force majeure in the IRP when their clock runs out?
I don't think we mentioned
it.
They claimed a force majeure as to why they still think that we still have to be a customer of theirs.
Who's
Rickman.
Rickman's
their own determined force majeure end date is January.
It's depending on, it's like the 24th or 25th, depending on, you have to add it's kind of a complex algorithm. Jen might be able to, but it's 180 days
from the day they declared force majeure, and so that was when July.
180 days past the date of
implementation.
Yeah, up to. So the force majeure lasts for the duration of the force majeure or for 180 days, whichever is less. And they contend that what they're experiencing is force majeure and that it's persisting.
So,
but yeah, it puts us in January, in late January.
The reason we share that with you is we've looked at what we might do just to choose on our own to get out of the contract, since it doesn't seem to be something that's a going concern. And we looked at trying to do that earlier. It probably would have ended up in a lawsuit. So we thought, why don't we just let time be on our side and we'll wait it out. And in fact, we have a plan to be able to wait it out, and that would be less expensive. So that's the path.
And you didn't see anything in our IRP, because that was, we put that together back in May, June, delivered it in June. And at that point, they were saying, I think it was June, and then it got pushed to July. Then it just kept getting pushed further and further. So they keep telling us it's just about ready. We keep having it in our pass-through, I believe, and having to push it off because they keep doing the same to us. They keep saying, it's going to be up, it's going to be ready. Here's a tour, you can come see it. And then just keeps getting kicked, the can keeps getting pushed down the road. So this again is our IRP plan for this year. It's again not very different than what was presented in the IRP. The one thing we want to talk about now, it is something that we haven't really talked much about, but it is part of the peak day, and that's really more focusing on the peak hour of the day. What happens within that day? Because things happen on a more micro basis than just the day. Even though all our supplies are purchased on the day, all of our, the cycles, we've gone over that, I don't want to go into that detail again. But really, things, even those cycles that you can make adjustments, it's really all daily volumes, it's all adjustments to the day. But so if we looked at our Wasatch Front demand, here's kind of a line for our Wasatch Front demand. When you think about it in terms of a day, it would look like this. Over your hours here at the bottom, so our morning is right here. But if you were to buy it on a day, and what's called ratably, so you have the same rate throughout the day, it would look like this. That would be our demand on our system. That is not what our demand looks like on a day-to-day basis. It looks like this, where you have peaks and valleys. It all evens out. This is kind of your average for the day. But you have peaks and valleys throughout the day. The complicating factor is that your supplies used to meet this demand also come in on a ratable basis, meaning you buy those on a daily basis and they want to give them to you throughout the day. Nobody's sitting at a wellhead cranking up the volume and cranking down the volume in the middle of the day. It's all got to be met somehow, either by storage or line pack on the upstream pipelines, but really it's meant to give you things even throughout the day. So here, to make our supply for our peak day at the Wasatch Front, we've got our aquifer supplies down here shown in orange. Then you add to that what's the trick?
Just turn it on and turn it off. That's really high tech.
Have your friend press this.
Sorry. There we go. All right, so then you add to that clay basin supply, and although, we know we have our no notice, and we often think of clay basin as being able to adjust throughout the day, the complicating factor is that on a peak day, we're expecting to get 111 out of clay basin. That's our MRD, our maximum required delivery, meaning that's what Questar Pipeline has to be able to deliver to us on a peak day. The only way we're going to get that, because they're allocating the basin and everybody at that point is probably trying to get their maximum amount on that day, we can't expect that they're going to give us 300 a day for half the day and then less for the second half of the day. We can really only count on getting that 111 at any point during that day, because that's our maximum deliverability. So we've got to assume we're going to get 111 all day long in order to get 111 for the day. Does that make sense? That same rate all day long to get our total amount. So we've got to assume that to be coming in flat as well. And then on top of that, you add our purchases and our equity supplies. So again, they're coming from plants, coming from wellheads, that they're not turning about to slow it down or speed it up throughout the day. It's flowing what it's flowing, and it comes in flat. So what that leaves you with is your supply is coming in like this, and your demand is really doing this, which leaves us long on some parts of the day and short during the peak hour, meaning we're taking more gas off the pipeline than we're putting into the pipeline on that peak hour. So what we found is that, you know, right now and historically, the pipelines have handled that. And in particular, Questar Pipeline has done most of that, because Kern River, not having any storage on their pipe, they'll do it on kind of a best efforts basis to let us adjust, but most of those gate stations are flow control. So they basically put in what you bought off of them for the day. If you bought 200,000 decatherms, they're going to set their meter at 200 decatherms and give you 200 decatherms evenly throughout that day. And that's mainly what we've gotten from Kern River. They've been great, and they've, you know, when they can, they've said best efforts, they're going to give us, you know, they'll change that flow and give us more during the peak hours if they can, and do what they can. Historically, we've met most of that off Questar Pipeline. We have pressure controlled stations on Questar Pipeline, which basically just flow whatever we take from it. So we've kind of been pulling off their pipeline the same way that red line looks. So we're trying, and even though our peak, our annual demand has, you know, kind of slowed, or, you know, the growth has slowed, the peak hour with all of our, you know, I think Barry's kind of had this discussion before with his setback thermostats and stuff like that, the peak hour is still growing. So this situation here, this issue here is actually getting worse as we continue to add load, because everybody's still using
our peak hour has been growing at a higher rate than our peak day. Does that make sense? And our demand.
Eric, you question.
Are you gauging that by pressuring your pipes or by
managing
reads at peak?
That is just looking at the meter reads coming into our system, so our gate station volumes coming
into
our system.
We can
so
meter
that's from your city gates, not
city gates.
Customers.
Yes, city gates.
But we can do customer too, Eric. We have the ability with our electronic meter to know what they're doing by hour now too.
And you're doing that?
But we can on when we go and specifically request it when they go out for the meet, but we are not doing it for this presentation.
And that's not how you got this.
No, he has that.
No, the way this is derived right here, because we haven't actually had a peak day, this is derived from a generic profile that's been created looking at historic days. So our engineering group has looked at those historic days, come up with a profile, and I've applied that profile to the peak day volume. That's how we came up with this. It's not an actual meter.
But we see this every day during the winter, at least. Burning more from 8 to 10 or whatever.
For sure.
And the way our system is...
If you measured it, something.
Right. And it is based on measurement. It's just we haven't had a peak data measure. But the way our system is set up, like I've explained before, you know, if there's a load on our system, it's going to pull off the upstream pipeline. Just the way there's not a ton of line pack on our system to hold from day to day. It's more an hourly type line pack that's on our system. So it's pulling directly off the pipeline. This swing is being pushed to the upstream pipeline. So we're looking at ways as the pipeline's pushing back on us, trying to get us to mitigate this. We're looking at ways to kind of try and fix this so that we're not relying on that pipe. I guess the pipeline pack. So my next slide. Matt, can you just forward?
It goes in and out of working.
Okay. All right. Our next slide is just talking about options for what we're trying to do to mitigate that. That brings us to one of the reasons why we're talking here. Some of this is stuff, and there's going to be a couple options here, and none of them's the silver bullet. It's all, you know, things that we're going to do. And this first one is one of the things we're actually doing, and we're going to work on trying to do some of this winter, which is one of the reasons we want to talk to you now, is using the aquifers a little bit differently to try and offset that. If we were to go back, which it let me, It did. This, like I said, comes in, we can assume the aquifers come in evenly, but they are one of our supply sources that we actually have some control over. Because we fully subscribe the aquifers, we're not kind of fighting anybody else for nominations at the aquifers. If we don't have enough nominated to pull out of the aquifers, nobody else is going to take that deliverability from us out of the aquifers. It's going to be there for us. So that is one of the ones where we can actually, our gas control anyway, can work with Pipelines Gas Control, which they're kind of related a little bit. And they can
sit in the same room.
They can manage those aquifers. But they can do that. They're not having to worry about other shippers in there to where they'd be fighting for that deliverability. So the aquifers were the first idea of one way to mitigate that is, you know, try and deliver more during that peak hour and maybe less during those other hours so that at the end of the day the nomination evens out, but shifting it to match the demand. So that's the...
And it's close. It's the closest thing we have to essentially on-system storage.
Right. It does have to go flow through the pipeline, but it gives us control over it. It is just like an on-system storage to where we can match our demand with the supply coming from the aquifer. So that's the first thing, and that's one we are looking to do this year. The next one is, once it's up and running, that is the caveat here, but utilizing withdrawals from Rickman Creek storage. So when that is up and running, again, we can do at the different cycles, we'll be limited to cycles there, but we'll have that deliverability. We may be able to use Rickman Creek to do some of that adjusting throughout the day as well, the withdrawals from there. Storage facilities are a little different than I said, like the wells. Nobody's sitting at the well turning a valve to deliver more or less. At some of the storage facilities, if there's available capacity, they can do a little bit of that. So utilizing Rickman is one thing that we may be able to do going forward. The next one is, we've talked before about an on-system storage facility, and we looked at that kind of in comparison to aquifers for storage, for peak shaving storage. One thought is to maybe look at an on-system storage simply for meeting that peak day type situation too, for, you know, shortening that, just using it for a few hours or something during the day to reduce that demand on the pipeline during those hours. And that is really what a lot of LDCs do. If you look at, you know, the SoCals and the PGEs, and even ones on the East Coast, they'll have LNG storage for meeting their peak hours. That's what they'll do a lot is load balancing and meet just a few hours during the day because they have complete control over that. It's not subject to the nominations on the interstate pipeline at all. It's completely in their control. So an on-system storage, it would be a little different than the one the cost analysis we did versus the aquifers. This would be looking at it for a different purchase or a different purpose, sorry. So you may actually see us put an RFP out just to get costs and ideas for how much something like that would cost. So that is something that you may see us do prior to the IRP coming out in June. So another reason why we wanted to talk to you today and give you a heads up so that you hear it from us and know why you may see us do an RFP for something like that prior to the IRP. It's just a matter of seeing what we could get, what it would cost, what type of things are out there. So you may see something like that. And then the next one is look for services provided by the upstream pipelines. You know, talk to our major pipelines that serve us, whether it's, you know, Questar Pipeline or Kern River, and see what services they can provide, whether it's, you know, something that additional capacity or if it's a special service they have to provide, or if it's, you know, defining no notice so that it provides this or whatever it may be, we need to look at that as well and talk to the pipelines. We're just trying to stay ahead of this and try and mitigate that little gap that you saw there. So before I move on to the next thing, is that
Well, I had a question. You know, Questar has some higher pressure lines within its system. Is that correct?
Questar Gas?
Questar Gas, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, we have the one down south is, I don't, these guys might know
26.
The
people.
26.
Is,
I was talking about from Indianola to St. George. That's 720 MAOP.
But there's nothing within the like Wasatch Front that
there is. Feeder line 26, which serves from Payson up to the center of the system and serves Pacific Corps as well. That is a higher pressure line that does have some line pack in it, but again, that's subject to the availability of high pressure into that pipeline. So we're only really getting 720 into that, and it's still a little bit limited as to how, because of the volume that we have flowing through that pipe just for us isn't that high. It's part of it, and that actually is part of how we're planning to manage it for this year. Part of that is to use supplies from Payson and purchase some of them off of map 332, which is the Payson point off of Questar Pipeline's mainline 104, which is their higher pressure line.
But you're at the heart of, I mean, that is, we've looked at that and say, okay, we have all those capabilities. Are we still able to recover the system? And our peak day, remember, is like 3 days in a row. And the first day we usually handle, the second day handle, but if that thing hits on the third day, then we're concerned that going into the future, we're not concerned about this winter, but going into the future, we're getting feedback from pipeline that our peak hour needs are not going to be able to be fully met with how we've enjoyed our no notice. So that they're getting stretched in their capability of how much they can handle because of the increase in our total as well as our continuation of the shape of the curve, which has always been out there.
And that high pressure line is how we are managing this now. It is part of our plan for right now. The problem is the volume is constrained because Questar Pipeline system on the south is constrained. So most of our volumes coming off Questar Pipeline are actually on their northern system, coming in at Little Mountain and Hiram and Porter's Lane. So that's a little bit of a constraint is from that. But the high pressure is exactly how we're doing it. And it's backhauling it on their pipe, getting it to Payson. And that is kind of our plan. That's kind of our ace in the hole right now is the fact that we have that higher pressure pipe.
I was just wondering, have you considered any rate design issues for doing this, like with customers?
Like so, a time of use type rate?
Yeah,
I mean,
we wanted to grow up to be like the electric company someday, but no, we have not proposed that. But recognizing that expense, and I guess that's you've hit right on the issue that we should be proactive in saying, okay, how's best should we handle this? And then depending on what the costs are related to that, does that translate to saying, okay, who are the main users of that? What we've shown you here is our sales customers. So this is, we haven't put transmission in on the graph.
Well, I would disagree with you a little bit. That is our sales demand. But because of the way it works, transportation customers, they're bringing their supply in on a daily basis.
You did not let me finish, so I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I was just correcting.
Finish your thought. So
the reality is that whole swing is really pushed on to our customers because their supply is coming in flat throughout the day. They deliver it to our system. If they're going to burn 100 for that day, they're going to deliver 100 to our system. And the reality is it's going to come in a ratable basis, regardless of whether they use it ratably or not. So it really pushes all of that swing on the hourly basis onto our customers. So, but we are, I think, looking at every option.
We need to.
Well, Carol, are you saying that maybe the aquifers could be part of the cost of the aquifers could be passed on to?
Well,
she's looking at how and
if there's ways to motivate
electric
people
company,
to.
They have demand rates and they have time of day rates as it relates to these costs. We have not gone there, but we ought to. We should at least look at it and see if that makes sense and how we might do it.
John, you have a question?
Just a quick one on the Rickman.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about utilizing cycles. What's the length of cycles?
Well, right now there's only 4 cycles on the day. That's changing in April. So, and really 2 of those cycles are timely and evening, which are the day before. So there's really, during the day, there's really only two opportunities to make changes, but there is one in the morning. There will be three opportunities to change it during the day, starting in April.
So 6 to 8, but they don't necessarily coincide with the 6 a.m. You don't even
know. Yeah.
But
the idea is that to the extent the overlap, that you would take during your peak and you could actually refill pull it down.
That's what we would do for Rickman, in my mind, in theory. That's all it is really right now.
That's what I'm saying.
Rickman's all in theoretical at this point.
Well, so are the line pressures getting too low during those peak hours?
Questar, I'm not exactly sure what's going on because it's really an issue that's happening on the upstream pipeline. We're just hearing from the upstream pipeline that it's beginning to get to the point where they're asking us to back off on how much we're pulling from them on the peak hours. So it's really a pressure issue on the upstream pipeline. So yeah, their pressures are starting to get lower. So when we look at our joint operating agreement with them every year, and it tells us what our pressures are going to be, our low pressures and stuff like that, it's becoming harder and harder to manage that joint operating agreement, and they are, and that's where this really came to light, that we had to start looking at this, that the pressures were getting too low on the upstream pipeline because of the way we're pulling the gas off and putting it on. So that's what brought it to light. John, you had another question.
So I'm curious if we think of the no notice service that Questar has purchased, how large in terms of capacity is that compared to these?
So we have 203,542, so 200,000 dekatherms. The problem with it is part of no notice, it limits us to our contract capacity. So it's really not supposed to allow them to give us anything more than our contract capacity. So if we went back to this graph, at this point, you know, if our contract capacity was this, which it is, we're actually going above that contract capacity. So even though we have the no notice of 203, there's limitations about going above our contract capacity, which we're really doing on a number of hours during the day.
Well, that's the peak day. At least they're saying it's not a huge issue, but they're just kind of raising concerns about a peak day happening and not being able to handle those swings for us anymore.
So no notice isn't exactly what we've been thinking is, I guess, is what you're telling me.
I don't know if it's ever been, correct me if I'm wrong, but if they've ever been clear about it being up to our contract, you know, capped at our contract quantity on a daily basis, because they're going back to that idea that we pay rates on a daily basis, we nominate on a daily basis, you know what I mean, but yet we're using them on an hourly basis on a peak day, potentially above our contract.
If that's their viewpoint, is no notice just basic permission to use less?
Usually what it ends up doing on high load days is we end up buying more gas and injecting less into Clay Basin, and it's the Clay Basin nomination that gets adjusted because that's our no-notice source.
But you're at the heart of where we're pushing back with our affiliate, saying you got to define this for us. And so part of what we'll do is ask the world what options we have, and they may come and be really clear with what options they have with us.
But they may not be as nice as we thought.
There could be that moment that happens, but we'll have.
We'll find out.
Yep.
Hey, Will. Can we go back to my own education here? So, is it correct to say below the where that blue bar is at it, let's say 725,000, we are able to swing like the no notice with Questar pipeline assisted more the peak day is the concern, but the average winter day if we're below this.
Right.
Today we're doing it under that number every day.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's pretty cold outside, but it's not an issue.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, just like Bill said about the joint operating agreement, that's when everything kind of hit the fan. You know, when they were saying, well, on a peak day, you're expecting this, and your peak day is growing because your load's growing, and your peak hour is growing, and we're not comfortable with those kinds of numbers. But today it's fine, and tomorrow it's fine. And
so the no notice is providing us benefit most days.
Right.
It's just when we project out to the peak day.
Exactly. Because we could, if this swing went and did this and didn't go above this line, we'd be fine because we could always do a nomination here and have the gas coming in more than we needed even on that peak hour. And then at the end of the day, since our average turned out to be less, no notice would then adjust our nomination at Clay Basin.
That's kind of how John said.
And you would wind up with less gas coming in on the day because it would adjust down that it would adjust like down this right, this yeah. piece down here. But that's on a winter day, not necessarily a peak day. Peak day, they don't have enough capacity in their pipe to just do this for everybody.
So the peak day is like the average temperature is 5 degrees,
yeah.
Negative.
I think it's negative 5 degrees,
sorry.
Minus 5 at Salt Lake Airport.
And have we ever got, so you've designed for the peak day, and what number would that be?
That's
the peak day to the Wasatch Front. So it's not. It doesn't look like our 1.3. This is literally just demand on to our Wasatch Front.
So we carved the Wasatch Front out of that peak day. And that is with wind speeds and continuation, day of the week. I mean, all those things are into that number.
And so is this the only problem in the Wasatch Front, or is it
other ways? No, I mean, we have to be aware of it, but that's the big point.
That's exactly right. It's not necessarily just the Wasatch Front. I mean, all those, if you think of Park City, the same thing is happening there. You know, those gate stations are pulling off in the same type way, and yet the gas is going on. This was just an example.
But that contract takes the same.
What's that?
That contract takes the
yes,
same.
Yes, it's all in the same.
But I mean, all the rest, yeah, they're all affecting it,
right.
But it's all shown at this point.
Right, okay.
John?
Just a follow-up to that, and this is mainly just to make sure I've got my terms correct, because I've shifted gears between different utilities, but when Questar talks about a peak day, as you just elaborated, this is a sort of a theoretical that you don't get terribly often. How often? How many? You know, one.
It's 95% confidence of 1 in 20 year event.
So it's a 1 in 20. Okay. Thanks.
Did I get that right, Matt?
You did.
Yeah. That's pretty good. I mean, you clicked right in on that.
But have we had one in the last 20 years? Because I've been here that long.
And we have not. so much for 95%.
When you said this set our new send out record.
Right.
That didn't qualify as a peak day.
Nope, wasn't called enough.
Which is, it gives us focus. I don't want to say concern. We're focused on it because to get that big a day and to see some of those things happen, we say, wow, if we do have this kind of chance of having this happen, we need to be properly prepared for it.
And that is something else I think we need to address going forward. If you look at our highest send-out days, some of the issues we saw there were freeze-offs to this supply. And I think that's something that we're trying to look at going forward as well is, you know, all those purchases, even if they're baseload or peaking or spot purchases, you know, the reliability of all of those, you know, on those days. Because now that, you know, our new world that we live in with our supplies, that everything comes from wet gas, you know, as of a couple of years ago, seems like there's more and more freeze-offs every time it gets really cold. So when we're at a -5 event here, and it's -30 or whatever out in Wyoming, that's something that we need to consider going forward is just, you know, the reliability of those supplies and having contingency plans, having backup, stuff like that for them. So, and to us, the aquifers and Clay Basin, I think, are some of the sources, and Rickman Creek, once it's running, are some of the sources
but
that we have
to look at. We're confident in this winter, aren't we? We're seeing the reasons.
Chuckle, which really
We may need to move on, get some things in the works before we file the next IRP for next winter's heating season.
So, how close was our record send-out day to the peak for that year?
We are 1.3.
So last December 30th.
I want to say, so if 1.3 is our peak day, I think we had a 1.2.
So
yeah, it counted. I don't want you to think.
No, well, the 1.2 I think was overall send out. The 1.3
was
is
that
just
with transportation?
Hour. So we were over one. So we were probably around one versus 1.3 if you're just looking at sales customers.
So not as close.
Does the interruptible customer, is that just for like pipeline emergencies? It's not for like weather related events or
we can interrupt them.
That's system capacity. So if we if our system's only designed for firm customers. So when it gets really cold like that and there's temperature thresholds on the system, then we'll turn off the interruptible customers in terms of we can't even if your gas is showing up at the city gate, our system's not designed to move it to you. And there's temperature thresholds. Okay. But at this point, there's only less than 50,000 dekatherms a day of interruptible flowing. So okay. there's not a great deal of interruptible gas on our system anymore.
I assume when you look at the cost of an LNG facility, you'll compare that to the cost of increasing your MAOP on the other feeder lines.
We could. I mean, it's not just the MAOP, though. We have to be able to get those delivered higher pressures from the pipelines as well.
Right. But as the cycle that you showed first goes like this, when it's below your maximum...
You're packing.
You can bring that in the afternoon, pack it for the morning, right?
Our pipelines actually can handle it right now, but the point Will's making is that we have to have the guaranteed pressure from the upstream pipeline, which is the party that came to us and said, hey, we can't, our current tariff doesn't guarantee you the pressure to be able to recover. Now, we're going to ask them for ways, and they might be able to with compression. I mean, we will anticipate that our affiliate could come with a service that could relate to those costs related to adding compression to be able to meet our needs. That's another way that they could do that.
Right.
Another way
is an on-system sort of thing.
Right. Because you're talking about bringing the MAOP up to create the line pack on our system that will be able to handle that.
Exactly.
And again, that's contingent on the pressure being there. As I've said before, if we're only at 300 pounds, on our system, we don't have a day's worth of line pack. There's not that much line pack.
Seven and a quarter, maybe have a half a day. Maybe it
right.
handles that peak in the morning. And the
but we'd have to have then the 700 pounds coming in to begin with to get our system up to 700. And right now, we don't have the ability to get our system up there yet. Right now.
But am I wrong to say that you could draw it in the afternoon since the peak is in the morning? You could draw in the afternoon?
Not if they're not at 700. We can't get our system up to 700 if what's going into it is 300, which is pipeline going into it.
But Eric, I would say we are working towards that. You know, we're working to get a 720 line, you know, throughout the Wasatch Front, and we're working currently to get it up to all the way to Hiram up in Cache Valley. But we're doing that incrementally, and until the entire line is up to 720, we can't raise it up.
Is this just a problem with your affiliate, or is it a problem with Kern River, too?
Well, it's...
That's a good segue to your next section.
It is, but to address it real quick, is the problem with Kern River, they do have a little bit higher pressure, but they're still... They don't really have the problem because they're just giving it to us flat every day, so we're not pulling off of them on an hourly basis. They're setting the gate station to give us ratable flow all day long. So
could you do pressure control there instead of flow control?
We could, but they're not able. I mean, the problem is we don't have any guarantees of it. So we can't really model it and count on it because they're not. What we've gone to them and asked them for is, would you be willing to do this? Would you be willing to, even if we adjusted the cycles or different times during the day? And they've been, you know, really amenable to helping us and saying, we'll do what we can, but it's a best efforts basis. So all we've gotten from them is a best efforts basis. We're trying to get a little bit better than a best efforts basis going forward.
They may respond with our request out there on a service that they can. I mean, we know the pipe that they're running through the valley is over 1,000 pounds, but for whatever reason, they still won't guarantee anything past 650?
650. And we are planning, that is another thing we're planning to do with them this year, is to do some of that, to throughout the winter, take some of the flow, work with their gas control. We've met with their gas control, and they're going to give us those flows, kind of, you know, bump it up during our peak hours and bump it back down in the afternoon. So we are going to work with them, work and see what they can provide us, and maybe through doing that, they'll be more comfortable at some point, you know, offering us a service that's better than a best efforts kind of basis.
One of the things you said earlier was that you were limited to a contract amount. Is one of the options to just increase your contract amount?
Yeah. Again, that's why we've got, you know, services provided, may require additional capacity. I mean, we're looking at all of those options. We don't have anything set in stone, and that's one of them, is maybe just contracting for more and then using no notice on that. That is absolutely an option going forward as well. Phelan?
So do you plan then in the next RFP to
discuss this issue?
Yes. Yeah, there'll be a lot more detail on this in the next.
That's a nice segue to keep this meeting going.
Yeah. We just wanted to give, because we are, like I said, doing some of this heating season, so we wanted to give you a heads up that we are doing it now. So you can look back when we look at the IRP and you know kind of what we're doing right now.
And I do that jokingly, if you want to keep going on it, but I'm sensitive to your time, and I think this meeting room got scheduled at 12, or at least, and so we don't want to go past that. But we still have some other interesting topics, I think.
I'll keep us moving. This is my last slide, and then I'll sit down and shut up. In our last year's IRP, we mentioned, you may or may not have noticed, that multiple gate stations serving the Wasatch Front are near 100% capacity. I think we mentioned they were over 92% capacity. And there was a number of them. Some of them outside the Wasatch Front aren't as big of a concern because they're in areas that aren't growing. There's one in Altamont, stuff like that. We're not worried about a lot of growth there. Looking at the Wasatch Front, we looked at the gate stations that are near 100%. And really, if you think of it, as the Wasatch Front is one big bucket with a number of hoses coming into it, all the different gate stations coming in. If you give yourself that buffer in one of the hoses, that kind of solves your problem for the whole bucket. The hose that we're looking at for solving the problem initially is Hunter Park Gate Station. As some of you, I think, have gone on a tour, we did a lot of work to increase our side of the station, which brought the Questar gas side of the station up to 300,000 decatherm capacity, pretty easily upgradable to 400,000 decatherms. We didn't make any improvements on the Kern River side, so they're still limited on that side to 250,000 decatherms. So we went to them and asked them for what it would take to bring that gate station up to either 300,000 or 400,000 decatherms. They got back to us. It's going to take a little longer lead time than we had originally thought, but they think they can do it for the 2016-2017 heating season, so they gave us a bid. We are moving forward on that. And what they wound up with is to go to 300,000 decatherms a day was $4,120,000 plus taxes and gross up. To upgrade to 400,000, it was 4.15. So it was $30,000 more. It's just a couple valves, really, a couple different things. But if we were to go
That's
in...
It's a pretty good incentive to have us pick the whole thing at once. Yeah.
If we were to go in and do 300 and then want to upgrade again later, they said it's to go back in and do everything work again, it would be an additional 200,000. So our plan is actually to go forward and do the initial 400,000, which will mean the Kern River side of the station is now good for 400,000 and the Questar gas side is good for 300,000, but ours is, there's some simpler things that we could do to go in and bring ours to 400,000 at some point. So the extra capacity to our system to kind of address that concern of how close they were to 100% capacity is to add capacity at the Hunter Park Gate Station, which was designed with this in mind. So we just wanted to give you a heads up on that because we are moving forward with that and it'll be in construction probably this summer to bring that up. So that was one of the reasons we wanted to meet today, is to let you know that we're going to go forward with that upgrade on their side as a current. Any questions on that? Then
we'll talk about that more at our next IRP. I don't want to think that we own on all of them. Thanks, Will.
Now you no longer.
And Will does have a doctor's appointment, so we're going to get Mark, I think, involved next. But just as a little introduction on this, the infrastructure replacement, we're running a pretty serious program in doing that, but we also watch very closely the federal legislation that has to be renewed. In fact, right now it's on a four-year basis, and it should technically be done by December 31. I don't know if the bill will get passed by then, but we asked Mark, who's the expert in our corporation on those particular things, to come and just give us a quick update on some things that we might be anticipating coming out of what gets passed into law, as well as what we anticipate could be happening related to storage. Is that, and I won't say any more so that you won't complain that I took away all your thunder like I did Will's.
So we're going to step back and look at a little more broad issues, like Barry said, in the industry. I don't know if you've heard of Aliso Canyon, what's going on there. This is a storage facility about 20 miles north of L.A. SoCal Gas operates this storage facility. It's about the seventh largest storage facility in the U.S. right now. Eighth largest, sorry. But it's located about 20 miles north of L.A. It's got a leaking well right now. It's leaking through the casing into the ground, coming up through the ground, creating a huge plume of gas going over a populated area. They've displaced several hundred families. About 700 people have been displaced and moved out to live in motels and hotels and wherever else they can go while they try to get this thing taken care of.
They have a no-fly zone.
They do.
It's an odorized gas. Odorized. So everybody's smelling it.
It's that bad.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's 2,000 feet.
2,000 feet, no fly. There's no airplanes, helicopters, anything below.
This is going on 2,000 months feet. Right now. This is not just this.
Yeah, week. They found the leak in October, and they don't expect to be able to get this thing solved for another few months. They're drilling some relief wells to the side of it to try to relieve the gas, to relieve the pressure. They're also tried to fill the casing and the tubing of the well that's leaking with higher pressure water to force.
They sent the A-team down and they failed.
And that's not working. So now they're going to try to fill the casing through a relief well. So, but it's several miles deep and they're trying to find an 8-inch casing and trying to drill into it to be able to fill it. It's not an easy fix. So it's still months away. It's big. It's got worked 86 billion cubic feet of working gas. It's huge. So it's bigger than what we're looking at with our storage. But anyway, the reason this is significant is right now the Pipeline Safety Act is being reauthorized. As Barry said, we reauthorize the Pipeline Safety Act every 4 years. It got reauthorized in 2011, and out of that, as you may recall, there was 42 congressional mandates, mostly pointed towards PHMSA to get some things done, and they have not yet completed some of those major rulemakings to take care of those congressional mandates. So it was the Pipeline Safety Regulatory Certainty and Jobs Creation Act is what it was in 2011. We haven't had much regulatory certainty. And the reason is because they haven't made the regulations, rules to fulfill those congressional mandates. So that leaves us in a situation where we really don't know where to put our money because we're trying to live up to those congressional mandates, but there's no regulations yet to tell us exactly what they are. And so talk about some of those. What's happening with the reauthorization is the Senate has put out a Senate bill. It's passed the committees. The Senate will vote on it probably not until January now to see if they pass this. This reauthorizes all the funding for PHMSA for another 4 years, but they also throw in other things to mandates again to beef up the safety and security of the pipeline integrity of the pipeline system. So one of those issues is storage. And this thing that's happening in Aliso Canyon is going to drive a lot of this regulation. So what they're throwing into the pipeline safety bill is a requirement to include by reference an API standard, API 1171, that requires integrity management for downhole systems, so for storage. So that integrity management requirement is something that Questar Pipeline is going to have to deal with. So their costs are going to start going up on storage, which
potentially,
which translates to potential.
We're 100% user of the aquifers. That's a really direct transfer. the clay basin requirements would be shared, obviously, with other clay basins.
Right, so this reauthorization will more than likely include provisions. So then it'll be statutory. Then it's going to require PHMSA to put together rules to go along with that, which will require that standard to be incorporated by reference. Now, INGA, AGA have agreed with that course of action. They're basically submitted a petition for rulemaking already to incorporate those standards so that it'll be a federal standard, be consistent across all states.
We've been looking at this. I don't think Utah or Wyoming has specific state standards related to storage facilities yet, as everybody's tried to clamor on a national level to try to figure out how to handle this one. It looks like it's going to end up being put at a federal level so that it will be a federally required mandate to be meeting instead of, well, this state requires this. And it seemed, I mean, for a while there's a little bit of indecision as to which side the major industry players were going to come down on, but the AGA as well as INGA have come down on, let's get this one standard to fit everybody right.
Right. So, because they're both endorsing it, we're pretty certain it's going to end up in this reauthorization of the pipeline safety bill. It's called the Safe Pipes Act, or Safe Pipes Bill. This time, that's an acronym for something, I don't know what it is. So, the storage will be in there, but the Senate will probably vote on this in January. The House still has to do their version of the reauthorization. So it'll happen sometime in 2016. The last reauthorization was 2011, but the President signed it in January of 2012. So it's already going to be beyond the 4 years. So along with that, you know, the last reauthorization, there was a couple of major upcoming rulemakings that are going to try to address some of those mandates that came in 4 years ago. They've been working on these for 4 years. So this one, Safety of Transmission and Gathering Lines Rule, we call it the Mega Rule. It's a huge rule coming out to basically enhance the integrity management of transmission lines. And what that is going to do is expand, at least we think it is, based on the, you know, advanced notices and things they've been talking about, is going to expand the integrity management beyond HCAs. So it's going to expand integrity management to what they call moderate consequence areas. And that's really whenever there's a house or a structure intended for human occupancy along a pipeline, just one, that's within the potential impact radius, they're going to require some kind of integrity management on those, on that extended pipeline.
This potentially, okay, this will impact us, the LDC, more. It will also impact pipelines, but you figure a lot of times pipelines are just long run, and if you're lucky, there isn't a man and his dog living within a circular area, it's just antelope and something else. But we're running our high pressure lines through a residential area that right now didn't fall under a high consequence area, but you go to a moderate consequence area, and it will be a lot higher level of scrutiny and requirements and testing that will be required of us.
Right. So we're not sure what's good. This is a proposed rule to meet some of those mandates, but it's not out yet. And then it just keeps getting rolled back and rolled back and rolled back. The last rollback was to January 11th. They're expecting it to come out. I suspect it'll get rolled back again. And again, maybe by mid-year we might see it, but we'll see. Part of that is also doing a kind of a fitness for service of pre-regulatory pipe, some of the old grandfathered pipe, just making sure that we do have a pressure test on that. So a lot of the records research we've been doing is to help with that, to make sure that we have those lines have been tested.
So that's before 1970?
Yeah, pre-1970 pipe. So And that came out in the legislation 2011 that PHMSA needs to make sure that that is looked at by all operating companies. So it's, they call it integrity verification.
We've looked at it, Eric. I mean, you're going down the path that when I heard it, it was concerned that, you know, hey, I thought we'd done everything that we needed to on the pre-70 pipe, and we had as it related to the requirements up to this point. They may require us to pressure test, and we do not have records of pressure testing all of our pre-70 pipe.
Right.
We've done the pothole and the surveillance and everything that was required up to that, but some of them may be required of us, or if we could, put a pig through, but they're not pigable.
Yeah, so we'll know the requirements when the rule comes out, but it's basically integrity verification or validating their fitness for service to continue. And that requires to make sure that we have done all of our due diligence in finding prior pressure tests or redo pressure tests, those kinds of things. So that's a big deal, but we've done a lot of work on that already. It's this regulatory certainty thing. We know it's coming, but we don't know exactly how it's coming. But we haven't sat on our laurels and done nothing. We've gone out and we've been doing a lot of work the last 4 or 5 years and to try to get our system up to speed. So, but that proposed rule is coming. We just don't know when. Another proposed rule is coming. This is a rupture detection and valve rule. This has to do with automatic shutoff valves and remote control valves that isolate high consequence areas. So making sure that we can get to those valves and shut them off within an hour of a known rupture or a known leak detection. Again, these are in transmission lines, high consequence areas. And so most of the valves along the Wasatch Front, we can get to within an hour. We can get to and shut them off with our current crews. There are places that are a little more remote that are still high consequence that we might have to install automatic shutoff valves. Questar Pipeline is looking at doing that and has been doing that in several places. But again, this is a proposed rule, so because we don't know exactly what it's going to say, we don't want to go out and spend a ton of money until we know what it's going to look like.
And so just toggling between the two of these. The previous slide is a possibility of an increase in expenses. This latter one, okay, is more a possibility of an increase in capital. None of them are rules yet, but they're going to be coming out with notice of proposed rules. Sometimes they flow through very quickly. Sometimes people argue over them for a year. We're being pretty proactive in that we think we're going to be pretty close to being able to be compliant in many areas, maybe not all, but we wanted to let you know about them.
Right, and there's several other minor rules that have come out and are going to come out that aren't going to affect us very much. Yeah.
What do you mean by an hour? Because that seems like a long time.
Well, what they would like to do...
We're going to go a full 60 minutes on it. No, you're right, Artie, but they define it. It's a federal thing. Go defend an hour for him.
What they're basically saying is that when a rupture occurs, they want us to be able to isolate it within an hour. Now, sounds like a long time, but if looking historically, it is hard to get to some of these valves quickly. What they would like to do is have you have automatic shutoff valves that they can actuate as soon as a rupture is detected, they automatically shut down.
Well, I guess that's what I'm asking is, what do you mean by detection? I mean, is it, so you've got some developer out there, he ruptures a line and he calls the company.
Right, now you're actually...
Barry says, well, just sit around for 59 minutes before
yeah.
through.
Yeah, don't smoke. no, you've taken it down to the IHP level, and we want you to know that what we're talking about here is high pressure.
Transmission.
Yeah, the transmission level. But the principle, okay, so the principle you're talking about is the same.
The line for the plumber.
Yeah, but it's the same. And the idea is that it's a significant overhaul on systems that it's almost would be physically impossible or capitally, they wouldn't have enough capital to be able to go and change their whole system to be able to isolate it that fast without putting in these excess flow valves. And these excess flow valves can be pretty costly on that. So I think they're trying to look at reality and what the rules would be. We have some right now, right, Mark?
Yeah, we do. And Questar Pipeline's been putting in more of these. But these are, you know, these are $500,000 facilities that you have to put in. And when a valve is accessible where somebody can drive to it and shut it off within the hour, which is, I believe, what this regulation is going to require, is 1 hour.
But what I'm getting at is you've got a line that's ruptured.
Right.
And you've got a neighborhood around it. That gas is
going,
well, if you think it's going up, but
if it's
going up in the air, who cares? Right. You get the guy to light a match on it and we'll watch it for an hour. Who cares? but
when it goes into a facility, yep.
Yeah, when it's spreading in the ground and potentially traveling into homes and things like that, I don't want to say it too loudly, but I need Saratoga.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an hour seems like a long time for the company. I'm not saying you're sitting around for 15 minutes.
We aren't.
That seems like an awfully long time to.
Pressure.
Yeah, but and for high pressure, we are reporting the news. It isn't what our goal is. Our goal is to try to get it off as immediately
as
upon finding it. But that's what is being proposed in the rule.
What? Well, go ahead.
I guess to follow up on Artie's idea here, if we're talking Wasatch Front, it seems like there isn't any place on the Wasatch Front that's an hour away.
And that's why we're saying we think we're going to be getting compliant with what we think the rules are going to come out.
So I guess what we really might be asking is, okay, you've got a rule for an hour, but what are you actually planning on doing?
Yeah, we would have to, and I think we have done some of this, Matt. You can probably look at every single valve on our transmission line. This is a transmission rule. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not a rule for distribution pipe, just the transmission pipe. And Questar Gas has 700-800 miles of transmission pipe. Where it goes through high consequence areas, we will have to look at every valve and see if it meets the criteria. If we can get there and be able to meet the law, what the law is going to require us to do. If we can't get there with our crews in that time frame, then we will have to look at installing automated shutoff valves. Now, and these can be a little problematic too, because sometimes they do false trips. You know, if they shut off when they didn't need to shut off, well, then we got problems with capacity and customers and that kind of thing. So we have to look at this very carefully. We look at it valve by valve by valve to make sure that we can meet this criteria. Yeah, our goal is to shut it off as quickly as we possibly can. And sometimes, you know, somebody shoots a line, even a high pressure line. We probably wouldn't even see it. Gas control probably wouldn't even see it until somebody got out there and did a line patrol, or somebody drove by and noticed it, or something else. But
I can say we are looking at this meeting today too. We're probably looking closer at the remote control valves that our gas control can, you know, hit it and have it close, because we have quite a bit of fluctuations on our system throughout the day, and we don't want it to have a false trip. The unfortunate reality is, though, whether, you know, we get the line shut off in 15 minutes or 30 minutes, the damage is done. We really want to shut it off to be able to get first responders in. And it's something we're looking at, but they are costly. They're about $200,000 a site.
But, okay, I'm going to take his feedback, which is why we have these meetings, that I'm hearing to say, that's cool, that's a nice rule, but an hour almost seems like if we could give a report, and we're not prepared today to be able to say how well prepared we are in all parts of our system, but you'd be very interested in what we think our response time might be on this side, meaning the transmission on our system. They are addressing this issue at the intermediate high pressure level, through excess flow valves on service lines and requiring those to be installed at the time. We've begun doing that on our system. The big concern from the national level on it, from a capital expenditure side, is to go back and retrofit every single service line to be able to prevent these types of things. That has not been required yet. And but that, I don't think you have another slide. This is where that would be being implemented too.
Right. Well, there is an excess flow valve rule, proposed rule that is out. In fact, the technical advisory committee for PHMS is voting on it today. But that, requires us to go beyond single family homes to put in excess flow valves. And we're already doing it. So Questar Gas is pretty much on top of that. So it, for us, that's not a real significant issue, but we are doing it. So,
go ahead. I don't want to belabor this one, but in this rule, are there proposed consequences if the company doesn't say show up one within an hour? Are there consequences for that?
I think there are. I don't know exactly what they are, but I think there will be consequences. They're really, really, especially after San Bruno and,
right,
and some of these other incidents, they really want the operators to be able to get to those sites and get them shut off. If not, with automatic shutoff valves, which is CPUC is requiring PG&E to put in automatic valves, so they've been putting in hundreds of these. And to be able to isolate areas of high consequence if there was a rupture. So they also put in leak detection, so they will automatically detect if there's a major leak, they'll shut down. But then they have to analyze what does that do to the rest of the system. How do they manage capacity during those shutdowns? And so there's a lot of thought that has to go into every single one of these you put in. We've been Questar Gas has been looking at they've put some in, but they've been monitoring pressures on a almost like a minute by minute basis for a long period of time to see if there's anything that would cause it to false trip before they put them into service. Because they don't want to shut down a major supply into with the Wasatch Front based on a false trip. So
what, you said this rule won't be finalized probably before the middle of the year.
Well, that's the proposed rule. Will probably come out middle of the year. Right now, right now it's in May. That's the proposed rule, and then there's a comment period, and it could be a year or two before a final rule comes into play. And we just want to let you know kind of what's on the horizon.
I want Mark to give you a feel here. The takeaway on this is there isn't anything that has already been ordered. Although you have the pipeline. Yeah, three slides here. The pipeline reauthorization, we anticipate that getting voted on here the first of this next year, which will, and PHMSA, I don't know if you followed from a national level, but PHMSA has become the punching bag for all House of Representative people getting ready to run for re-election that are on that committee. They're just, because they have not been pleased with how they have gone about doing things. And they had a lot of mandates that they just didn't get done. Now, that said, I think they did a lot of good things, but that doesn't help you get reelected to compliment them. But I went to a Nehru committee where they just hammered on them and then watched a national thing. They've really been down on PHMSA. As you know, we refer a lot to them on what we try to do. So it will be interesting to see if they survive. But they have a new director. I don't know if that's interim or...
New administrator. No, yeah. she's the appointed administrator.
Yeah, to clean up.
Dominguez.
But we wanted to have you be aware of these. Right. We erred on the side of just giving you the heads up. We appreciate the feedback on it. We do think, I mean, right now we've had, and I'm going to go back to our service quality report that we provided for years and years and years, and that goes back into the 90s. We had had a goal to be able to always be to any emergency call in an hour or less. And we report it every month. And I wish that I could say right now that we never missed a month and not being able to get there within 1 hour. But sometimes we did, for whatever reason. But I think that's essentially what things have been out there. We have met many places far less than that, but our goal is not to be 95% or 99%, it's to be 100% of the time there. And that's at the IHP level. This is high pressure level, and so we haven't had as the regulations related to that, but it will impact us on our feeder line.
But the discussion you've had and the questions you've had, they've been discussing these at the federal level and the technical advisory committees to PHMSA, they've had this exact same discussion. And your concerns that you just brought up have been voiced at that level as well. So the technical advisory committees to PHMSA and PHMSA's rulemaking folks are considering exactly what you're talking about. You know, is an hour too long or should it be shortened? So what comes out in this rule, we'll have to see. But I know they've been having those same discussions. I've sat in on some of them. And a lot of questions around that.
This may be, you may not know the answer to this, so I might have to point to Barry or Kelvin on this one. Do you see that if these things get implemented, will this flow through the infrastructure tracker mechanism in the budget process, or will it come through a general rate case?
The second bullet, the one prior, go back one slide.
Oh, I just missed that.
Turn on.
So that would go through
your when you say infrastructure tracker, I mean, we're identifying...
Well, I think he's talking about integrity tracker.
I was talking about infrastructure.
Okay. Both, actually. Okay. This one would be our integrity management, which right now, you know, coming out of, I can't remember which case, but we now report that on a monthly basis. That is identified and tracked. And so that's an expense, and that's why Kelly was saying that.
Right.
The testing and all of that, yes, that would be an increase in that and would be summarized there as an expense. The next one, next slide here, these are capital expenditures.
Okay.
And those, some of them may be with the, on pipes that we're replacing. They may not be on pipes we're replacing, and so we'd be doing that somewhere else, right, Kelly?
Right. Well, I would imagine, yeah, if we were putting one of these in as part of a mainline replacement, yeah, we'd probably include it.
We would include that.
If we were going out and just doing one valve, it probably would.
Yeah, on a new piece of pipe that wasn't being replaced, we would do that outside of it.
Yeah, we'd have to talk about that a little bit. I'm not saying no, but just off the top of my head, there's replacing pipe and then there's doing something in response to...
No,
well,
wait,
but this valve would be part of the replacement.
Yeah. But it's not there, and so you're not replacing it, you're adding. That's what I'm saying. We'd have to talk. I'd have to think about it a little bit.
Well, okay, no.
But I'm not saying no, but it does, and I recognize that there...
No, you're at the root, or the heart of this issue, of the issue of, we could... So this would solve your issue. We could come and petition the commission. We say, look, here's a new federal mandate. We're going to have to go out and do this. We want to systematically do it. We'll go and do it. It's already existing pipe. We're not adding any people or anything here. We'll do it in a manner that we can go and be able to get recovery of it in between a case. That's really what's at the heart of the issue. I don't think anybody's denying that it needs to go out and be done. It's just whether or not the timing on it and how we get rate.
Yeah, because we love break it.
Yeah.
What I would ask...
We do it every 3 years.
...is, for fun, as this unfolds, and I'll leave it up to the company to make a decision about what's significant, but come back and keep us informed.
Yeah.
I think, I didn't know what we were doing today. It might actually be good to have pipelines safety.
Our thought, we wanted this to be part of this meeting here, and we got a couple of things related to infrastructure, so it's a good segue there. We'll tell you about. Then we'll have a meeting related to, that we have every April, that we would, I think, try to bring people up to date again. And then we think we're doing this under the IRP process, so that's what we'll do.
Okay.
We'll let you know, and we'll either ask for a meeting or have it just be part of one of our regular meetings when we go through our IRP workshops next year.
Well, then we also have quarterly meetings with Al-Zadeh where
that's
I think
true.
Some of these issues are discussed.
Probably, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They probably know all about this. Also. town for a little.
Yeah, we've had discussions with them, so.
Yep.
There are no more.
You guys are doing well. I mean, we only have a couple of slides left. But we wanted to give you a heads up. We've talked about this before, and it's related to, thanks Mark for being here, our risk management analysis that determines the prioritization of pipe replacement. Okay? I think hopefully some of you look at this and see that's a familiar chart. Hi, Eric. Eric does. He's all over this.
I just wanted you to get a little positive feedback there.
Yeah. Interaction. Feeling good. It's harder with being, I can't, you know.
Yeah. High five.
Yeah. High five. This is what we're talking about. We're going to talk about here, Matt. Casey are going to discuss. We wanted to show you this slide first, simply to set the table, recognizing that we have a lot of things that influence the timing and the replacement of our pipe. One that we all fairly, I think, could agree that we focus a lot on is this baby, and that's related to the risk scores that we put together. To refresh your mind, we had two exhibits coming out of our stipulation in the last general rate case, Exhibit 4 and Exhibit 5 right here, that dealt with high pressure and intermediate high pressure criteria that we consider when determining the prioritization of replacing the pipe. We today are only going to be focusing on Exhibit 4, which is the high pressure, and wanted to give you an update on what we're doing, on how we're trying to improve and expand and make it better. I'm now done. You got it.
And I'm going to turn this over to Casey just because he's the expert on the high pressure transmission risk model. My background is more on the distribution side, and on the distribution side we use a GIS based risk model to calculate the risk on our different pipe segments. And like we've mentioned before, that is probably the primary factor that we consider when we schedule replacements, but it is just one of many factors. We've talked about this slide quite a bit, and there's other synergies, whether it's road projects and other drivers that might get us to accelerate one project over another. But we do use the risk score as our primary driver. And on the high pressure transmission side, we're currently in the process of upgrading our risk program. And Casey here is by far the expert and can talk a little more about this. But it's going to be much more, I guess, intuitive and user friendly for us to be able to use it as a tool going forward. So we're going to be replacing what we're using for prioritization that's discussed in Exhibit 4. And Casey, I'll turn it over to you to talk a bit.
You look surprised.
I was surprised. I thought I was just going to be here if I didn't have any questions.
He only got a heads up yesterday.
So we've been using, Questar has had a software package and using an algorithm that is very much kind of what the industry has used starting 10 years ago when PHMSA started requiring this type of analysis. And we recently went to Dynamic Risk, who really is industry leader. And by that, I mean there are three main companies that do this: American Innovations, New Century, and Dynamic Risk. Dynamic Risk does their software suite, as well as they're really the only risk software company that kind of creates their own brain trust to think about new ways to analyze that. So for us, they were the ones to help us develop a new algorithm. And then what we did after they helped us create that, then we went and evaluated different suites of software that we could take that algorithm and use. And we determined the New Century, the spatial risk analysis, that was, for our needs, worked the best. And what that does, it takes full advantage of PAWS and other databases, and it's yes.
What's PAWS?
I'm sorry, PODS is a standard database that's a standardized database throughout the pipeline industry. So all kinds of vendors, when they put data, it's all named the same, so everybody can use it and it's not different.
And we just migrated our GIS system on the high pressure side to a new PODS model, is that not correct?
That's correct.
Does it stand for something?
Yeah, it's the pipeline, da 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 da.
Okay. Pipeline OD standard?
Data standard, I don't remember what the
OD
is.
Look at that, he'll get the
operations done.
Yeah.
And the big thing about PODS, it's the, and this is going deeper than maybe it needs to be, but PODS allows data that is geospatially aligned, and it's, so it's tied to physical features, where before we would say, okay, this pipeline from our stationing A to B has these, but it didn't have any meaning. You know, you couldn't put it on a map and you couldn't evaluate it. So with this new software using PODS, we can take all of our pipeline data and now it means something. We know the GPS locations when it comes to a high risk point and all of our pipeline. So
we anticipate that this will cause some reordering.
That's what I asked.
Yeah. Yeah, and we haven't done that yet. We know we have a meeting in April where we'll update you for sure, and if it's done by then, we'll be providing it.
Will it increase the total?
No, I mean, this is the universe has been set. I mean, we'll provide you the information based on where the universe has been set at this moment. If it increases the universe, we would be coming and asking the commission to add a pipe to that. But I don't think we're anticipating an increase in our master list, which is what I think your question went at.
So
when do you anticipate this being
up and running?
Up and running, that's the word.
The first results we'll have on our the end of this month. We're expecting that Christmas Eve it'll be a present.
That's pretty quick for all of us yesterday.
I thought Rickman was going to be our Christmas present. Who knew?
If I can, you know, when I talk about our old and our new, and that's a common question even as we are implementing this inside of Questar about how it'll affect our old versus our new risk results. And just the algorithm, just think about how this is more like we're going from an old, just a standard desktop calculator to a scientific calculator. So we're able to do more intricate math. We're able to evaluate things. And if you're familiar with computer programming, we're going to be say if this happens, and then this is a result, or this is a result, instead of going 1 plus 1 is equal to 2. And so it's just going to be able to give us much better resolution of our risk and be able to do much more real engineering algorithms, if you understand. And so we'll just have a much better sense of what's driving our risk than necessarily changing the order of our pipeline.
Yeah, that's the question I was going to ask next. Is, so if you get this software up and running on Christmas Eve, run it, is that going to affect your plans for 2016?
We don't anticipate it impacting our plans for 2016 simply because it's hard to change the battleship, if you will, analogy. But it may change things in 17 and 18. And I guess if it were something that totally surprised us and we thought we had a more critical moment, we're not going to not make that decision to go and do that. But we are not anticipating any changes from what we just filed as our 2016 budget.
And if I can, this is getting way past what we discussed that I would discuss. Sorry to everybody in Questar. But if you can imagine this algorithm, what it is a bunch of engineers sat around and go, how would I evaluate this one piece of pipe? What would I want to know? Okay. And what the computer software does is enable us to do that millions of times. Okay. Right? And so we really shouldn't come up with any surprises, you know. We'll be able to look at it and go, yep, that's what I would have decided. Yep, that's what I would have decided. And
millions of engineers don't usually come up with a lot of surprises, just based on my experience.
Mary Martha.
Sorry.
Well, thanks for sharing that one.
I had a joke earlier that I passed on, so I knew it.
Okay, get his back on
track. No engineering joke.
And then, okay. Actually, Kevin Cowan, who is, I don't know your order.
He is Casey's supervisor,
okay,
yes.
Yeah, he's excited about it. In fact, he's so excited he had to go on his Christmas vacation to Hawaii a week early so he could be back on Christmas.
So I think the plan is to provide more details in April, right?
Yeah.
And much many more specifics to it. This will take a while for us to kind of vet the data that we're getting out to make sure it's consistent with what we would expect. And, I don't really anticipate any changes in priorities until 2017 at the earliest.
The reason we're having this meeting now, the reason we're telling you this now, we were ordered by the commission as part of the stipulation. We said we would let you know when we made a change. We're in the process of making a change. It's better, it's improved. We'll give you more details when we get it done. I think there's one more.
There's one more.
Sorry. It
stands for Pipeline Open Data Standard.
Oh.
Open data.
See, it was the open. Yeah. You got that word wrong. Okay. The other thing, we're not only going to be able to create...
No, I'm just exactly that smart.
It's going to allow us not only to do our risk, but we're going to be able to do customized tools to evaluate our pipeline in many, many other ways. We can write different kinds of algorithms for different needs. And now it's going to allow us to have this geospatial viewing so we can view our risk on a map. And even though we've always had tabular data and graphing and that thing, there's something about seeing that risk, that pipeline on a map as it goes through a neighborhood or the city. And so that's something very important. And that's something that PHMSA is actually driving as part of the mega rule. They're telling us, you know, telling pipeline industry that you need to start using geospatial data as part of your risks, and being able to get that more complicated algorithm is also what this does, also fits that mega rule that we expect to see. So that's all I have.
Thanks, Casey. We only have, I think, one more slide.
You keep saying that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ernest still your
thumb. Well done.
All right.
We talked about it, and we anticipated as we put this together that a natural question might be, hey, well, what's happening with the investment? This is just a summary of what our actual investment has been in what has been identified as our universe of replacement. I don't want people to think that we weren't replacing what we've identified as to being part of the infrastructure replacement before 2010, because we were, but that was when we officially got it approved as being part of a tracker. And so that's why it's starting then. We've had budget levels there. We've typically, and what we wanted to show here is that we do a pretty dang good job of meeting our budget. In fact, it's a challenge not having Tony here, but to run a construction program and say, oh, hey, we just hit our max, so tell the guys to take an early vacation. We can't do that. So you can see here, we've typically been coming in a little bit above. We learned yesterday, just memory here, we had this budget, and you can see this line's a little bit less than 2014's, and that isn't because we had a negative inflation factor. It's because we were trying to, just on our own volition, say, hey, we went over, we didn't mean to go over, why don't we reduce our budget down for the amount that we went over? So we just chose to do that in what our letter was to the commission that last year. We learned from our updated capital investment that it looks like we're going to be coming in above our reduced amount. We'll simply observe to you that if we had kept our previous budget with the inflation factor, we would be right on this year. But that's where we're looking. We don't know. This is an estimate. That may change depending on what gets closed through this year. But we have been very appreciative. I know of the reviews of that, as well as the continued monitoring. Hopefully we're headed in the right direction on that. And I think we just barely got the budget out, plan for this year, and you've had some questions, we don't anticipate what we've just shared with you in changing what pipes we will do for this next year. We'll get data in, I guess, go after we get that information, but we're not anticipating any change in that. And we really do have one more side that says thank you, unless you have questions on this.
So what have you been waiting for, Kelly?
That's long we've all been waiting.
Say that again. Thanks again just to the commission. We typically have this type of meeting, but I think it's one that's anticipated in the framework of an IFP. We wanted to tell you up changes as it related to our capacity needs, peak day needs, some changes out there in the industry, and we will keep you abreast as soon as we know about them. If we would have, and maybe this would have been good to have Al Zadeh be part of this, we'll try to give you a heads up on.
Could you provide us with the slides,
yes,
and then
yeah,
we'll
yep,
put them on the website?
We'll do that.
Housekeeping question. I think she mentioned at the beginning that we weren't streaming, but we were recording.
Yeah.
There was some discussion earlier about Rickman. I just want to make sure that's all in terms of what we do with the recording.
That's public.
That was all, everything was public. Yeah. Okay.
We had a few slides that we publicized them instead of making them. We pulled them some from some confidential, but everything we have here was an anticipation.
But a verbal discussion, all of us too.
Okay. Verbal was too. So. Thanks for your time, and I don't think we have anything formally scheduled to see any of you before Christmas, so unless you really want to show up with Casey and see those new results on Christmas.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, just let us know. Let us know how it goes.
Okay. Good rest of today, this week, next week.
Okay.
And we will show up again. We will keep showing up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Click. Okay.